Jimmy Muyaha is leading the conversation all across South Africa right now. Stay tuned to SAFM.
Thank you very much to Greg for that news update. There'll be more news with Greg at 7 o'clock. You tune into the SAFM Market Update with Maniwe. I'm your host, Jimmy Moyaha. And on the show today, we're going to be reflecting on some of the performances and movements throughout the year. We're going to be doing that all week because there is that much that we need to cover from a year basis. We're going to start this week, or start today, by taking a look at the agri sector. We're going to speak to AgBiz's Wandile Sehlobo around the performance of the agricultural sector over the 2025 year and what we can make of some of the big announcements that have affected that sector. Then we also have a conversation with the team at the South African Reserve Bank around the latest efforts that they've embarked on in terms of modernizing South Africa's financial ecosystem, particularly looking at modernizing some of the payments solutions. We're going to be taking a look at the latest calls for potentially having universal banks in South Africa and what that would look like, or rather universal ATMs instead. We're going to look at that, reflect on that, and try and make sense of it. We also have a conversation with our resident tech and EV specialist, Nafisa Akabor. She's the founder of Recharge.co.za. We're going to be chatting to her around the best tech gift ideas for 2025. We are well within the festive period, and some of you might be wondering out there what it is that you can get your loved ones or even yourself for Christmas or the festive period this year. And we're going to be taking a look at some interesting ideas and some interesting tech gadgets that might be useful there.
SAFM Market Update with Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
As always, we kick off with a sense of how markets have been moving throughout the day. I'm joined on the line by wealth advisor at PSG Wealth Route 21, Nielis Brink, to take a look at market movements and see if we can make sense of them. Nielis, always lovely having you on the show. Thanks so much for taking the time. I think this is the first conversation you and I have had in 2025 where I feel that I can take a deep breath. I can sigh. We can reflect on the markets. It certainly has been a busy year across the board, locally, internationally, on the equities front, on commodities, on the currencies. How have you seen the year?
Good evening, Jimmy. Good to be back. Yes, I agree with you. We can definitely sigh a big sigh of relief and say that we have made it. With 15 days out to the end of the year and barely 7 trading days left, I think we're safe. We are around the corner. It's been a very busy year. It's been a great year. If we look across the board, you literally could have bought anything and you would have made money except for essentially Russian or Ukraine stock markets, right? And you should have avoided that one. It was pretty obvious. The rest of the world, essentially, if you just invested in the broader index, you would have had a double-figure return. Now, to get to that point where the JSE has given you well over 35% year to date. The S&P 500 over 17%. You've gotten similar figures from the UK, from France, from Germany, from Japan. It's really been a stellar year. We've seen the rand strengthen all the way to 16.77 today. Sometimes make the South African in me believe that we're on our way to 15, and then I wake up and I realize that we still are in South Africa with a lot of technical and a lot of structural challenges that we need to get through. But it is a good breath of fresh air to see the currency move almost 11% in a year's time. I must be very optimistic for the next year. If I look at where we're moving on an inflation basis, the decisions that has been made around that, I'm optimistic. I'm happy.
But Nielis, you're not the only one. I've been keeping an eye on the rand as well. I've spoken to various analysts. And if you look at it from a year basis, best performance of the year by far, easily. But the fact that this is now eclipsing the last 3 years of performance, we're basically back in territory that we haven't seen since coming out of the pandemic around 2022. And we know then that this at the moment is not to the downside, it's not negative. It's showing a lot of strength. Granted, there is a lot of dollar weakness that has persisted in the market. But South African factors, and particularly when you look at the South African story, that's been something else. Because if you think about the other currencies against other majors, against the euro, against the British pound, against the Australian dollar, we haven't seen the kind of performance we're seeing against the dollar.
Absolutely. That's a very important point you're making. If we take a look at euros and we take a look at the pound sterling, right, we definitely haven't seen a move to the tune of 10.5, 10.6% year to date. It's been closer to 2%. Which shows us its dollar weakness. And that, of course, Mr. Trump is pushing the dollar weaker with a lot of his decisions that he's making, or that rather that his administration is making. So it's not all for us to celebrate. But this does give us an opportunity with a slightly stronger rand. It does give us an opportunity to become a little bit more competitive on a global scale, right? It gives our South African investors opportunity to invest outside of South Africa at a slightly stronger rate. And it gives our importers a bit of that additional advantage. Obviously, the exporters are taking one on the nose after feeling what it feels like to export at $20. To do it at 16.70 is not a lot of fun. But I do believe the strong rand is temporary, Jimmy. Just to put a little bit of a frown on that smile. I do believe it's temporary. I don't think we can keep up with this momentum because South Africa has got a very big political undertaking that we have to get through.
Mm.
To get into a space, we don't have a single party that can step in and simply be elected as the two-thirds majority and we are all in a new beautiful country with a new beautiful leadership. It's simply not the way it's going to happen. So we need to figure out how to work together on a more formal basis. That would be required of us next year with the provincial elections and, of course, leading up into 2029. And to make sure that we don't make especially financial decisions over the next 4 years that would block or inhibit growth. Because that's the one thing that we haven't really unlocked yet, right? We've seen the JSE pop at a 35%, but our economic growth has yet to breach 1% per annum. So I think there's still a bit lacking from a structural point of view. And then I want to segue us into two other data points that I've been looking at.
Hmm.
Gold sitting at $4,300 a fine ounce.
Yep.
Okay. And we pair that with Bitcoin dropping to $85,000.
Mm-hmm.
What are we seeing? Is this not the canary in the mine?
Do you know what? And this is the conversation we've had before, Nihilus. We had this conversation and a lot of the crypto pundits came out and said Bitcoin is the new digital gold. It's going to replace gold. And we saw the rally. I mean, we certainly saw the Bitcoin price top up above $120,000 a coin at one stage. And at the time, the gold price wasn't moving. We're starting to see a reversion or a bit of a reversal in the trends in that respect. And the question, I suppose, then that starts to return to the minds of investors and traders is this the true test of what a reserve or what a safe haven bet would look like? And I want to get your thoughts on that, Nihilus.
So that's a very, very interesting question to me. So Bitcoin, this is not a statement against Bitcoin or by extension a statement against crypto.
And it's not financial advice.
That's not financial advice, and T's and C's apply. So Bitcoin specifically, yes, I believe very strongly that Bitcoin and by extension other solid crypto coins have got a place in the market. I mean, you can't ignore a several trillion dollar market. You cannot ignore a 365% return over the last 5 years. Just to put that into perspective, gold's return over the last 5 years was 130%. So it gave you 3x what gold gave you, and everybody's loving gold, right? So we can't ignore Bitcoin. What I am saying, though, If we look at the return of Bitcoin over the last 7 years, no particular reason for seven, it's only since when I really started tracking it as an indicator. Bitcoin is not digital gold. It is not a safe haven. I know that's what it's been sold for. I know that's what it's been punted for. The typical reaction in the market of an investor is to run away from Bitcoin when the market goes risk off. I don't know why. I just look at the numbers, right? And if they run away from Bitcoin and run towards gold when the market is becoming into a risk-off position, should Bitcoin not be a signal to us that the equity markets, it's like the Bitcoin's the signal and the equity market sell-off would be the confirmation.
See, that's an interesting perspective. That's definitely something we're going to look into and dip into when the new year resumes. But Nellis, before I let you go, I want to get your thoughts on what you are looking forward to in the new year. I know this year has certainly been one that hasn't been short on conversation and activity and market volatility. I, for one, am looking forward to a calmer 2026. Is that what you're looking forward to?
Be realistic,
I'm
Jimmy. That's not
hopeful.
going to happen. You must have a very good break throughout December. You're not having a calmer 2026 by any stretch of the imagination. I think we're going to see a bit more of whipsawing. I'm very, very positive about our industrials for next year, South Africa specifically, because we had a good year through resources, we had a good forward momentum. And I believe that can be, if we look at the earnings of the last quarter that came out of a lot of our industrial companies, it looked good. The earnings are expansion or are expanding, and we're seeing these companies trading at a discount to their intrinsic value. So I think we can have another stellar year that is not as concentrated on a few stocks as we've had in 2025. That's what I'm positive for. I'm very positive to see what the economy makes of this new 3% inflation target. I like where we're heading with our Minister of Finance and, of course, the Governor of the Reserve Bank starting to work together to balance our trade. So that's on the positive note. On the slightly cautious note, the Ukraine-Russian deal must get somewhere. And I believe it's going to end up to a point where they give half of Ukraine to Russia, which can cause bigger problems. And then we've got the Mag 7. The Mag 7 AI stocks, I believe we've got a problem rising there. To very simply put it, they are overvalued. They are overvalued, and it's the same pool of money running around in circles. This is, once again, not something against AI. It's just basic logic. They cannot keep growing at the pace they're growing without the brick and mortar development necessary to do so, which is practically impossible to do in the time frame. So that's where I believe our first shakes in this beautiful building will come.
So, 2026 is going to be more of the same as 2025. It's going to be even more interesting as we start to review different conversations and have those conversations play out in the markets. For now, we'll have to leave this conversation on that note. Thank you so much to Nellis Brink for all his contributions throughout the year and for joining us to take a look at markets today and potentially what markets could look like going into the new year.
There are plenty of people who want to invest in the stock market but don't because they believe it's only for the rich. Well, now you can buy some of the best performing investments in the world even if all you have is 1 rand. That's right, 1 rand. I'm talking to Connie Bloom, CEO of a digital assets trading platform built on the blockchain, and the company's called Mesh Trade, to talk about what the future of investing looks like. And as we find out, it's definitely not just for the rich. Don't forget, join me, Kieran Ryan, weekly on the MoneyWeb Crypto Podcast. Listen on moneyweb.co.za, the MoneyWeb app, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify.
MoneyWeb, your trusted source for business and investment insights.
You are listening to Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
This week, the South African Reserve Bank announced that they would continue as part of their modernization efforts to overhaul South Africa's cash system. And surprise, surprise, the focus point here is on ATMs. The South African Reserve Bank, through the creation of a cash management company, is potentially looking to roll out universal ATMs, which means for you and I as consumers that we would finally be able to use any ATM to access our funds. For more on this, I'm joined on the line by the head of the Payment Ecosystem Modernization Program at the South African Reserve Bank, Pradeep Maharaj, to take a look at this and see what we make of it. Pradeep, lovely to have you on the show. Thanks so much for taking the time. Let's first start by giving some of our listeners a bit of context around the modernization programs and the efforts of the Reserve Bank and why these programs are in place.
We start with a program that looks to digitize payments in South Africa. What we want to do is bring digital payment options to every person in this country, and that they must have that choice, and it should be fairly low cost or at no cost. It should be very secure and should be very safe and should cost very little. In doing that, we will see a reduction in cash. Currently, 62% of South Africans rely on cash for their daily transactions. We'd like to see that come down dramatically. By providing digital payment options, we will drive better social development outcomes, and we could be adding to economic growth. In any case, digital payments will act as a necessary but not sufficient condition for greater financial inclusion. Of course, in doing that, seeing cash come down, we've now got a strategy that responds to the challenges of the cost of cash, the accessibility of cash in the economy, to ensure that those that do rely on cash will also see a dramatic reduction in the cost of that cash, as well as an increased accessibility of that cash.
Now, Pradeep, from a modernization perspective, we know that moving to a digital payment infrastructure is not going to be something that happens overnight, especially given that South Africa moves about 180 billion rands in cash in a single year. And for a lot of people, as you rightly mentioned, that is the way they transact primarily. If we're now looking at the cash smart strategy and the modernization and potentially making cash more accessible and the costs of those what then does that mean for how we reform what is currently there? Currently, a lot of the banks have their own ATMs. What would universal ATMs even mean?
Universal ATMs means, and we call it in central banking terms, financial terms, we call it white label ATMs, which means that there's no branding on a particular brand of financial institution whose ATM is recognized. It would be a universal ATM, and therefore using it, doesn't matter which institution holds your account or your store of value, you will be able to access that cash at any of the ATMs without any additional charges or costs, which means that the cost of using the ATM then comes down dramatically. At the same time, you wouldn't see, currently you go to a garage, you'll see four ATMs lined up against each other, all different banks. What we will do is remove three of them, leave one, make it white label, and use the other three in other areas which are underserved at this point in time, which means that you're without wanting to invest in more ATMs, you actually increase the accessibility of cash through ATMs across the country.
Pradeep, we have previously seen white label ATMs in the past. We've seen other operators offer this to South Africans in the past. And the main concern there was around the rates for a lot of the banks and a lot of the relationships between the banks. This came at a significant cost to the consumers. How is this modernization program or this modernization strategy going to look to address that aspect of it from a banking perspective? Are we saying that from a central bank perspective, there's going to be a mandate that the commercial banks then need to execute on that then creates that affordability?
Yes. So we'll do a few things. One is we will rationalize the infrastructure that serves cash for demand in the country. We've got 113 cash centers around the country today, all in private sector hands. We'd want to bring that into the utility function and rationalize that, which means that the cost of getting cash to an end user will drop. The number of movements of vehicles moving cash will also reduce dramatically. Then you go down the route of white label ATMs. Again, you will rationalize that infrastructure. You will locate them better, and you will reduce the number of movement of cash to those ATMs and back. And in doing so, you reduce overall costs. Because they're going to be white label ATMs, you will do away what we call today interchange. Interchange is a fee set by the South African Reserve Bank that allows for, if I'm banking at Bank A and I go to an ATM that's provided by Bank B, then there's a cost of using that ATM that I will pay because that's an interchange between Bank A and Bank B in order to use their facility. And what we do is we do away with all of that. You do away with all of that, and therefore the cost to the end user will come down quite dramatically.
Pradeep, what does this mean for the retailers? We know that a lot of the cash transactions are facilitated by the likes of the ShopRite Group, the Pick and Pay Group, the Spar Group. What does this mean in terms of modernization for accessing cash at retail till points? Is that going to be affected as part of this modernization strategy?
We are proposing that we have discussions with the big retailers. We'd want to, the third leg of our modernization strategy is to deal with ethical cash. Ethical cash, we talk about, is a regulatory framework, a licensing framework for the handling of cash. What we'd like to see is that put a framework together that allows you to license wholesalers of cash, and the retailers, Pick and Pay, ShopRite, Spar, and a whole range of others, could then apply for a license and be treated as a wholesaler, which means that we'd propose to them that they become part of the utility and access cash directly from the utility. So their cost of cash will come down as well, and again, impact on the end user's cost of cash, also make it more accessible. And then we will normalize what an interchange should be, what the retailer would be able to charge at the till for cash in or cash out.
Pradeep, before I let you go, from a modernization perspective, obviously this is an ongoing program that hasn't just started now and won't just end anytime soon. Do we have kind of timelines around when we potentially expect to see some of these rollouts happening, or at least when consultation with the market and with industry would potentially take place?
We announced the strategy 2 weeks ago. We began consultation with industry, and we are hoping to broaden that consultation in January and February. We'd like to have a draft kind of discussion paper around licensing and the framework around regulating cash sometime by the end of March, sometime in April. And we think that we can start to run out phase one of an ATM solution, white label ATM solution, towards the end of next year. Hopefully, if all things go well, we'll also have the utility function up and running by then. This journey will take us probably 2 to 3 years. However, we're quite keen to start to see some low-hanging fruits begin to bear fruit in servicing the needs of the people who rely on cash. Generally, the most vulnerable are those that can least afford the high costs that are associated with cash.
Modernizing South Africa's payment and monetary systems to ensure that greater accessibility is achieved and there is a reduced reliance on cash. That is the aim of the South African Reserve Bank, and we'll keep an eye on these efforts and see how they continue to unfold. We'll leave this conversation on that note, though. Thank you so much to the head of the Payments Ecosystem Modernization Program at the South African Reserve Bank, Pradeep Maharaj, for joining us to take a look at their efforts and what this would mean.
There are plenty of people who want to invest in the stock market but don't because they believe it's only for the rich. Well, now you can buy some of the best performing investments in the world even if all you have is 1 rand. That's right, 1 rand. I'm talking to Connie Bloom, CEO of a digital assets trading platform built on the blockchain, and the company's called Mesh Trade, to talk about what the future of investing looks like. And as we find out, it's definitely not just for the rich. Don't forget, join me, Kieran Ryan, weekly on the MoneyWeb Crypto Podcast. Listen on moneyweb.co.za, the MoneyWeb app, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify.
MoneyWeb, your trusted source for business and investment insights.
You are listening to Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
As we draw closer to the end of the year and closer to the final shows that we'll be doing for the 2025 year, we're going to continue reflecting on the performances of various sectors throughout the year. Today, we are reflecting on the agricultural sector. The market has seen quite a few changes, ups and downs over the last year, and we're going to reflect on those with the chief economist at the Agricultural Business Chamber of South Africa, otherwise known as AGBIS. Wandile Sehlobo joins me on the line now to see what we make of the agricultural news of the year. Ntata Sehlobo, thanks so much for the time. Always lovely catching up with you, especially at this time of the year when it's been such an eventful year. Let's start perhaps with a review of the year and how you reflect on some of the highlights throughout.
Thanks so very much, Jimmy, for this conversation. Look, I would categorize 2025 for South Africa's agriculture as a mixed year. We have a broad uptick in some of the two subsectors, which is the field crops, which are mainly grains, oilseed, sugarcane, as well as horticulture, which is fruit and vegetables and wine production. But in the last subsector, the livestock industry, particularly cattle farming, that has been challenged throughout this year. At the start, with higher feed prices, later on in the year, as we see the recovery in grain production, feed prices came down by over 30% year on year. But the foot and mouth disease remain a key issue. So when one looks at the assessment of the sector, we continue to believe that in the early new year, when StatsSA releases the figures, it will show that 2025 probably grew by plus 8% in agriculture. But the subsector perspective will show that it's a mixed year. There are some subsectors that are doing well and others that are not doing so well. To those that are doing well, Jimmy, the key benefit there is really the favorable rainfall, because there aren't any policy levers that I would say significantly we've pulled to push things forward this year. But we were blessed to have favorable rainfall, minimal interruption on many fronts. Trade continued well. And I think this is what delivers perhaps this broad optimism, but mixed when one look at it in detail.
Wandile, let's take a look at some of the reflections or some of the factors that would have influenced the agricultural sector in a bit more detail. Let's perhaps start with at the start of the year, we got interesting announcements as early as April that we would be seeing tariffs, and the agricultural sector was likely one of the sectors that was largest affected by that tariff announcement, alongside the announcement that the AGOA agreement would not be renewed or would potentially not be renewed at that time. We didn't know for sure. Let's reflect on those and the impact that that would have had on the agricultural space throughout the year.
Sure. So the challenge with South Africa's agriculture on anything that is related to trade is that we have an agricultural sector that is export oriented. So when there are negative news on a trade front, that's something that we worry about. And of course, when the US signaled that and said, look, we will be putting on some of these tariffs, we worried about them, but we were also worried about what the reaction will be on some of our other trading partners. Because when you look at our farming sector, take 2024, for example, we saw our exports reaching a record $13.7 billion. For 2025, we think we will cross the $14 billion mark. And the distribution of these exports, about nearly half of it is the African continent. Then you have Asia and the Middle East, about 24%. 19% or so, the EU, and of course the UK and the others. And the US is about 4% of our agricultural exports. But as that announcement comes, we were entering or closer to starting the harvest period in citrus. And that 4% to the US has a lot of exposure in the citrus industry: wine, table grapes, nuts, ostrich products, fruit juices, amongst other products. So if you were farming in citrus dal in the Western Cape, this was one of the worrying parts, because we know that the folks in that area, they export a lot to the US. And I think some of the people listening to this conversation would be say 4%, but why were we talking so much the whole year about this? But that 4% is quite substantive, because it's around about $500 million or so. And for those industries, and also concentrated in the Western Cape and to a certain extent KZN and Mpumalanga through the macadamia nuts, that's what was a major worry. But what really saved us was the fact that in the second to the third quarter of the year, there was that 90-day period into the third quarter of the year where the U.S. said, look, there's this 90-day window, but the tariffs will rise for everyone to be at 10%. And the farmers were able to take advantage of that to an extent that South Africa's agricultural exports to the U.S. in Q2 2025, they were actually up 26% year on year at just over $160 million. So a lot of guys took advantage and pushed the exports through that period. But we were also fortunate that the demand in other parts of the world was fairly strong. And when I look at the data now that we have, Jimmy, for the first three quarters of the year that we've completed, we see South Africa's overall now agriculture exports to the world market up 10% at around $11.7 billion. Of course, the fact that we had a good crop is one factor. The ports are also functioning reasonably well. And as well as the fact that the global demand remains strong are some of those factors that supported us. But of course, the U.S. issue remains a major worry, because if you look at the Q3 figures then of agricultural exports to the U.S., while I say on Q2, the exports were up 26%, we saw then that on the third quarter, they come down by 11%, which again then shows that early impact of the tariffs. We know now that there are certain industries that they have exempted, including nuts, fruit juices, and oranges, which are the products that they demand the most. But I think the central point really to your question is that the trade policy is disruptive, especially to an export-oriented agricultural sector like ours.
Wandile, did this trade disruption have a significant impact on our international trade balance with other countries?
I would say we still remain on solid footing. What helped us in South Africa is the fact that our export markets are well diversified. So while I'm worried and I was looking at what other countries would be doing, one was also pleased because countries like China began saying, hey, we will actually be lowering the import tariff to encourage more products from the African continent to come in. We saw also the South African authorities going to Asia, going to the Middle East and searching for new markets and starting up those conversations. And of course, rightly after the US announced its tariffs, we saw Minister Parks Tau of the DTIC and the Minister at DECO, Mr. Ronald Lamola, going out and really making a couple of points where they were saying, one, they will be engaging the countries we are trading with to make sure that they firm relations. And that's a point of both economic diplomacy and trade policy. Second, saying they will be jointly also looking at export diversification. And we've seen them doing that and jointly with the private sector on searching those markets. But what would be important, Jimmy, is actually accelerating both maintenance of the relationship that we have, but also tapping into the new ones. What has helped now is the fact that we have been good on that front of maintenance. But I think we need to accelerate then on opening up the new markets.
If you're just joining us, we are in conversation with the chief economist at the Agricultural Business Chamber of South Africa, Wandile Sehlobo. We're taking a look at the agricultural sector over the 2025 year, reflecting on its performance and perhaps looking ahead to what 2026 could hold. Wandile, you touched on the fact that we have seen an increase in diversification conversations. We've seen an active involvement from a government perspective to unlock new markets. And I want to dig into that in a bit more detail and just take a look at what that does for the agricultural sector in South Africa. We have probably some of the best agricultural produce in the world, whether we're looking at citrus, whether we're looking at livestock. We've reflected on all of these conversations throughout the year. And for many a year, we have had limited market access, so to speak, in certain markets, and suddenly, almost overnight, we've been able to unlock new markets. That speaks more to the quality of what we're able to put out into the global market, and saying that our farmers and our agricultural sector has always been world class.
Absolutely, Jimmy. We have some of the best quality that we are able to put in the market. But I will say this, and I guess this is a credit to also the previous ministers, Minister Togo Didiza and the others, because much of the export markets that you saw being announced also this year, it's a build up on some of the work that was already underway. Because to open up these new markets, it usually takes at minimum 3 years, 4 years, which is why we were worried to say, even on an export diversification conversation, we are starting it now, but we have to be cognizant that one, it takes time on opening. Two, it's also this aspect of the relationship, private sector building relationship with some of the stakeholders in any country that we are going into. So I think that the build up on that work has pretty much assisted. But I think the core point is central to what you are making, that the fact that we have the good quality is what makes others, when South Africa says, hey, I'm putting these products in on the table, people stop and look and engage, because they are able to see that quality to an extent that, I mean, if you look today, we are a semi-arid country. I know we are a big country of around 122 million hectares, but what we farm really for agricultural products, especially crops and fruit, is only on about 15% of South Africa. So it's a really small size that we're able to farm, but we are able to be the only African country in the top 40 global agricultural exporters. We are ranked at number 32, and we are continuing to creep up in that ranking as we expand and we increase our productivity. So you are 100% correct that the quality that we're putting out is the one that allows many of the markets, either it's in the EU, the UK, and elsewhere in Asia, to really look to South Africa to say, hey, we are looking for high-value beef, fruit, wine, and other products.
Wandile, let's take a look at the state of the local sector. We have a lot of the produce that stays in the local market and that is able to then service the local market. We still import quite a bit from an agricultural standpoint, but I want to look at the state of the local market. Are we adequately providing for that market and making sure that in that provision we create affordable pricing for our own people before looking at the markets outside South Africa?
To me, we will never go and put the product into the export market without satisfying the domestic market. So much of what goes to the exports is really after making sure that we have what we need in South Africa in a number of commodities. We export over 36 agricultural commodities. That is a country we send out there. But of course, that doesn't mean that there aren't problems. There are problems in South Africa. We all know that we struggle with household food insecurity. Over 5 million households in South Africa struggle with this challenge. And the key things in those South Africans, of over 5 million South Africans, to be specific, the key thing is also around the income poverty problem that South Africa struggles with. So it's not so much the challenge that food prices in South Africa are higher. In fact, if you look at South African food prices in the ranking compared to what we see elsewhere, we are actually on the more affordable side of global food prices. But the major challenge is that if there is no income in a household, it doesn't matter where the price of a product will be. There's no income, which is why then we always say the poverty challenges in South Africa. One, agriculture can play a part by making sure it consistently provides the food so that the supplies are healthy in the country. Secondly, it creates the jobs that it can, because as we speak now, Jimmy, there are around 920,000 people that are working in primary agriculture and about 350,000 people in a value chain. So give or take, you almost have about 1.3 million South Africans in a food, fiber, and the beverages value chain. But you could still increase that number by close to a million jobs, which is what Chapter 6 of the NDP talked about. So there's that agriculture can do, and those jobs can then improve the income and food security dynamics. But other sectors of the economy also needs to do to be vibrant. We need to see growth. So to resolve the hunger and the poverty problem, we really need to look to the sources of growth in the South African economy, while at the same time, of course, the agriculture plays its part. But I think to your central point, really South Africa caters for the local market and thereafter look to what we can send outside. On imports though, Jimmy, you are right. I mean, South Africa although we earned last year about $13.7 billion through export earnings in agricultural products, the reality is that we also spend just over $7 billion importing agricultural products into the country. But if you ask me what's on that import basket, it's primarily rice, which we can't plant in South Africa because we are a semi-arid country. Palm oil, for the same reason, we can't plant it in South Africa. And of course, wheat, we do have limitations on wheat. We grow only half of what we consume. Another half needs to be imported. And beyond that, it's a bit of poultry. But Jimmy, this is now, and I'm glad we are having this conversation in December, closer to Christmas time, this country spends close to $500 million importing whiskey. So in that agricultural trade balance, there's a lot of whiskey that some among us are bringing into the country.
Wandile, let's wrap up the conversation by taking a look at the potential that exists in the agricultural space. You touched on this in a bit of detail, but I want to get your thoughts around the 2026 year that could be a big year for the agricultural sector. We had a conversation around this before you and I started this conversation, saying that the climate-related conditions seem to be reverting back to something we haven't seen for the last 10 years, something that we are very familiar with that could allow for better planning, allow for better delivery from an agricultural perspective. I want to get your thoughts around 2026 expectations of the agricultural market and what lies ahead, what potentially lies ahead for it.
Let me answer this in two quick ways, Jimmy, and say one, for 2026, the weather conditions remain favorable. We are in a La Nina period. And the guys, when I look at the seed sales and look at the planting, it looks like we will be planting an area that is slightly higher than last year in grains and oil seeds. And of course, then on fruit, vegetables, we are pretty much optimistic. We are also seeing the vaccination on cattle for foot and mouth disease gaining momentum, and that will help us. So for the near term, those are some of the major supporting factors. And then we think that even on trade front, we will continue to export and exporting well. The second and the last part of this, Jimmy, is the medium to long-term growth potential. The South African government sits with about 2.5 million hectares of land. This is not the land that is somewhere up there that they still need to buy. They've bought it in the open market for land reform purposes. This land must be transferred to Black South Africans with title deeds. Pair that with blended finance, which the Land Bank and the Department of Agriculture can provide. And I think, Jimmy, through that, something revolutionary could happen. We could see the gross value added of agriculture expanding by plus 30%, and we can inch closer to creating that million jobs in agriculture and its value chain. So government, land bank, private sector, there is a capacity and a possibility in hand. It requires only decision making to kickstart this.
Decision making and collective partnership and collaboration is how we could potentially add a million jobs in the agricultural space. We'll leave the conversation on that note. Thanks so much to the chief economist at AgBiz, Wandile Sehlabo, for joining us to reflect on the agricultural sector for the 2025 year and potentially what lies ahead for 2026.
There are plenty of people who want to invest in the stock market but don't because they believe it's only for the rich. Well, now you can buy some of the best performing investments in the world even if all you have is 1 rand. That's right, 1 rand. I'm talking to Connie Bloom, CEO of a digital assets trading platform built on the blockchain, and the company's called Mesh Trade, to talk about what the future of investing looks like. And as we find out, it's definitely not just for the rich. Don't forget, join me, Kieran Ryan, weekly on the MoneyWeb Crypto Podcast. Listen on moneyweb.co.za, the MoneyWeb app, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify.
MoneyWeb, your trusted source for business and investment insights.
SAFM Market Update with Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
It is the final digital drive that we're going to be having for the 2025 year. And what better way to close off the year than by taking a look at some gifts and gadgets you can buy your loved ones over the festive period. As always, we're joined by our resident tech and EV specialist, Nafisa Akabor. She's the founder of recharged.co.za, and she joins us to take a look at her tech guide or gift guide for the 2025 year from some of the things she's been keeping an eye on throughout the year. Nafisa, lovely to have you on the show as always. Thanks so much for taking taking the time. It's been quite the year, and interestingly enough, this is probably the best time to be looking at gifts and gifting. How have you approached this?
Hey, Jimmy, great to be back. I can't believe the year has flown so quickly. Yeah, so I think a good way to approach it is to, I split it into three categories, like for home or for productivity or for travel. And at some point, someone you know would fit into these categories, regardless of gender. I mean, it could be applicable to everyone. So I'm quite excited to discuss firstly the home style gadgets. So these LED strip lights, they're quite fun. I think they'd make a fantastic gift. They're not very expensive. You can put them in your living room, your gaming room, or your kids' rooms. And the fun part is you can control it with a smartphone or remote control, but you can choose the color, set a little schedule. When, you know, make it like when the sun rises, you can have it to a certain theme, that kind of thing. So I think those are fun. Another one is a smart speaker. I mean, it could be any brand of smart speaker, really. But the main thing is that it gives you, most of them rather, would give you a Google functionality built in so you can ask it questions, because, I mean, it's quicker to search for stuff now by speaking rather than typing. And with like your Bluetooth or your Chromecast built in features, you can also put your music through them. So those are fantastic. And also they are useful in a sense that you can control other smart devices in your home network, or use it for your alarms and reminders. So I think those make pretty cool gifts. Another one, since we are already into summer, the Miko fans, they're really great, low-powered, very small. You can move them from your bedroom or your lounge. They operate very quietly as well. So if it's hot in the middle of summer in the night and you want to sleep with the fan on, you can keep this running and it's not really loud. The decibels are quite low. I think they say it's 20. Yeah, and you can move it around and it has a magnetic remote control. So you're never going to lose that. So those are pretty cool. And it also, one other nice thing about it, it actually is powered through a USB-C cable or a power outlet. So you can move it around with your power bank, you know, without using too much of electricity. Another fun summary gadget, I think, would be a JBL Go 3 speaker, as an example, a very small portable waterproof speaker that you can, I mean, use for kids' bath time, or you can use it in the pool this summer. A lot of them, well, this little dinky one that I'm particularly speaking about, it has only like 5 hours of playback, which is great if you're just having an afternoon pool party. But those make great gifts as well. And yeah, if you're brining and cooking this holiday season, a ThermoPro digital thermometer that I've come across, I think it's really cool. It's, precision cooking. If you want to get it right on the braai the first time, or you kind of want your, you don't want to remove something when it's too early. I love thermometers for cooking, and it's a digital one, and it also has a bottle opener attached to it, this particular one.
Nafisa, I'm going through the list of the products that you're mentioning. I know you've categorized them quite nicely on your website, and people can go check that out. It's recharge.co.za. But I really like, and for me, perhaps this is the nerd in me or the geek in me, is I really like gadgets and how you've kind of split it across home, productivity, and travel. Because like you said, we all know somebody in each of these spaces, and I find myself across all three of those spaces at any given point in time. Is there a standout gadget that you would say, I mean, perhaps let's move into the productivity segment or categorization. Is there a standout gadget there that you think would really work? I'm really liking the portable monitor idea. What's your favorite productivity gadget?
Well, speaking of portable monitor, I wouldn't mind owning one myself. I don't celebrate Christmas. But the portable USB-C monitor is fantastic. You can take it anywhere and you can, like, you know, double up on your screen size without the bulk, because you don't actually need a 3-pin plug anywhere. And normally screens are bulky and require those. But another one that's standing out for me, well, the two on that list also, is in an electric screwdriver set. I mean, nobody wants a bulky toolbox, and this little one that I have on my website has 24 different bits. So you just need one main part that does all the hard work. It has a magnetic motor with 2 speed settings. Yeah, you just change the bits that you need. And also a fast charging docking station, like whether you're in your office, whether in your home or home office, and however big your family is, everybody can charge their gadgets on one device. And these are fast powered USB-C ports and USB-A. So I think those are really cool to have around the house, because Invariably the people in your household have more than one gadget to charge, right?
Absolutely. I like that. You know what? I think if I'm being entirely honest with this list, I'm probably going to set up a gift registry and just buy all of this. Nafisa, let's take a look at the travel stuff, because that also, some of the gadgets that you have there and some of the ideas that you have there, we don't think about. I'm thinking about something like a luggage scale. And for some, it might seem, oh, it's a no-brainer, but I can't remember how many times I've been to an airport, arrived at the airport, and realized that I hadn't weighed my luggage. Take us through your travel ones. Give us your travel gift guide.
Yeah, so Jimmy, speaking about that scale that I put on my list, it's actually so small and so light. In itself, it weighs 85 grams. So there's not even like extra bulk in your luggage where you can just pop it in and make sure you're not overweight. Because if people are going away this December, if you're going to the north, you're going to need the heavy jackets and coats. So you probably want something like that. Or whether you're shopping, I mean, whether it's summer or winter, I think those are pretty nifty. And they're not very expensive, I'd say. Another favorite of mine on the travel side is a portable travel steamer. Now, I mean, all hotels have different rules and regulations, and some of them give you never know. It's like either or. I'd rather have my own steamer, because sometimes when you're in a very large hotel, they'll take forever to bring you your iron or a steamer. So yeah, you'd rather have your own. It's very compact and easy to travel with. And another highly recommended, which I'm sure most people know, is in-ear earbuds. You don't want to catch a flight without having some form of isolation or listening to your own music or TV series or whatever the case is. And of course, a power bank, which with a built-in cable, I gotta emphasize this time. You don't want to be carrying unnecessary cables around, and you'd rather have a power bank with the built-in cable, USB-C, so you never have to worry about that. And my absolute favorite item on this list, it just came out in South Africa last week. It's the new Viral Kodak Chamera. So it's a little digital keychain camera called the Chamera. So it's a mix of charm and camera. They're really cute, really dinky. It reminds you of the 80s. It takes these really cute 1.6 megapixel photos. And quite interestingly, I think it's the first tech product to come in a blind box. So it's quite exciting if you're gifted one or you buy yourself one, because you're never actually going to know which design you're getting.
Nafisa, do you think gifting has become more or less expensive? I mean, I'm looking at some of the items that you've got on your gift guide, and some of them really do make sense for the price point as well. How are you seeing the tech and gadget market at the moment? Do you think things are costing a little more or a little less?
They're definitely costing a lot more, because if you think of chip shortages and high-end smartphones, when I made this list, I actually wanted to make it more affordable, more accessible. And to think that these are smart gadgets, they're so accessible and easy to get. And you never think you can use your phone to control a gadget that's quite affordable. So I think for the listeners out there, you should definitely take a look at the list and see some of the fantastic stuff you can get for, yeah, while trying to save some money.
Nafisa, before I let you go, if you had to choose one gift to gift to someone and one gift to receive, what would those gifts be?
From my list or any gift?
Any gift.
Oh gosh, Jimmy, you're putting me on the spot. I think the charmer I just mentioned, it is so cute. I can't think of anyone who wouldn't want one. I would like love to gift my friends that, or any family member or upcoming birthdays. And in terms of what I want to receive, honestly, I feel like I've been so spoiled. I have so many gadgets at my disposal. I think the really nice gifts that work for me are sort of accessories for my products. So for my either my laptop or my phone, just to have a nicer casing for it or a bag to carry it in. Those are just invaluable.
Invaluable tech gifting ideas, especially as we are in the midst of the festive season. If you are looking for ideas, visit recharged.co.za. There's quite a comprehensive list there that covers home, productivity and travel, the three essentials of life. For now, we'll leave this conversation on that note. Thank you so much to Nafisa for her time and her contributions throughout the year. It's been absolutely wonderful having you as our resident tech and EV specialist. We look forward to doing this next year again. Nafisa Akabor, the founder of recharged.co.za, joining us for our final digital drive of the year and giving us her tech gift guide of the year.
There are plenty of people who want to invest in the stock market but don't, because they believe it's only for the rich. Well, now you can buy some of the best performing investments in the world, even if all you have is 1 rand. That's right, 1 rand. I'm talking to Connie Bloom, CEO of a digital assets trading platform built on the blockchain, and the company's called Mesh Trade, to talk about what the future of investing looks like. And as we find out, it's definitely not just for the rich. Don't forget, join me, Kieran Ryan, weekly on the MoneyWeb Crypto Podcast. Listen on moneyweb.co.za, the MoneyWeb app, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify.
MoneyWeb, your trusted source for business and investment insights.
SAFM Market Update with Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
That's the show for today, folks. If you've missed any of the conversations, of course, they'll be made available as podcasts. You can go back and catch up on them. As I said, this week, as we wind down for the year, markets will be closing from next week. This week will be the last week of the show. And so we're going to see if we can wrap up some of the important news that have happened throughout the year and just get some reflections on the performances of markets throughout the year. So that's what we're going to be focusing on this week. If there is anything urgent that comes up, of course, you'll hear it here first. But for now, it is coming up to 7 o'clock. Which means Greg Hurst is standing by to give you the latest round of evening news. He'll be followed by Michael Abramson and the Top Sport team. So from my side, good night.